From WXXI News, this is Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Our connection this hour was made last week when tennis superstar Naomi Osaka shocked the sports world by announcing that she was withdrawing from the French Open, one of the major tournaments of her sport. Osaka felt physically fit and appeared to be in form to make a run, but she revealed that she was struggling with her mental health. Osaka had skipped her media obligations leading into tournament play, and she had declined to attend a press conference or talk to reporters. Tournament organizers fined her for skipping out and threatened to throw her out of the event if she continued. In a statement, Osaka explained that she never wanted to be a distraction, and she said that withdrawing would be, quote, the best thing for the tournament, the other players, and my well-being. And she went on to say, quote, I am not a natural public speaker and get huge waves of anxiety before I speak to the world's media. I get really nervous and I find it stressful to always try and engage and give the best answers I can, end quote. Osaka also explained that she was experiencing depression and anxiety since winning her first major at the 2018 U.S. Open. She said that speaking to the media often makes her nervous, and she even apologized to any media members that she had impacted with her decision. In response, the president of the French Tennis Federation said he felt sorry for Osaka and said the tournament would try to make sure athletes have good experiences when they fulfill their obligations with the media. The response around the world was strong, both in support and in opposition to her decision. Some longtime journalists argued that talking to the press is part of the obligation of the job of being an athlete, and Osaka has to find a way to perform that duty. Others praised Osaka for engaging in self-care and in charting a new course in engaging with fans. After all, they said, Osaka has a social media platform and can produce her own content to communicate with the public. Why answer questions from reporters if it makes her uncomfortable? There's a lot to take in here. How do we care for our mental health? When is it right to step back from whatever we're doing? When is it right to press on with a job? What is the obligation of a star athlete or public figures? How should we expect public figures to communicate with us? What's the impact on kids who are certainly watching all of this closely? Our guests this hour include Dr. Mike Maloney, chief of the Sports Medicine Division in the Department of Orthopedics at the University of Rochester Medical Center, the founder of Fitness Science and CHAMP, two programs for athletes of all ages that integrate mindset training with physical conditioning. He's also a former elite athlete. I've always wanted to be a former elite athlete, Dr. Maloney.
Oh, God, that's a stretch. I'm not sure how that got in there.
Those are our words. How are you, sir?
I'm doing well, thank you. I'm really happy to be part of this.
Well, thanks for being here. Alexa Ross is a sports anchor and reporter at WROC-TV. Alexa, welcome back to the program.
Thank you so much for having me. This is a really important topic, and I'm so glad to be a part of having this conversation.
Good to have you, and good to have Dr. Craig Seifer, a sports psychologist for the Fitness Science Program and assistant professor of orthopedics at the University of Rochester Medical Center. Dr. Seifer, welcome. Thanks for being with us.
Oh, it's my pleasure, Evan. Thank you for having me on.
Okay, before we kind of... Well, I guess the first thing I want to do is just ask all of you kind of the overview or the lens in which you see this. There are so many different layers to this story to me, and there's a lot of different directions I think we need to go. Dr. Maloney, what stood out to you first when you heard her explanation for pulling out of the French Open?
Honestly, a little heartbreak. You know, as a fan, she's been an amazing athlete to watch. Her achievements at such a young age are tremendous. We'll always remember the match against Serena at the U.S.
Mm-hmm,
Open
mm-hmm.
and how gracefully at a young age she handled just tremendous pressure and even adversity, I guess, despite the fact that she won. So it was really hard to hear that it's gotten to this point for her that she had to step away from, you know, one of the greatest tennis tournaments there is.
Alexa Ross, what did you think? You might be on mute, Alexa. Yeah, there you are.
No, I was. Sorry about that. You know, as somebody, a young woman who also suffers with anxiety, for me, it was, wow, she really did something big here. And I felt a sense of pride. I felt as though she was somebody who exemplified so many young women, so many young athletes especially, who might not feel comfortable saying, oh, well, I don't like doing this, or, oh, this is really hard for me. And I think as we take a look at what Naomi Osaka did, we look at the response to her in response to how other athletes have addressed their own anxiety and how they've been received. But we can talk about that a little bit later.
Mm-hmm. Dr. Seifer, what did you think?
I think to echo some of the things that Alexa was saying just now, I think I was very encouraged by the reaction that I saw from her, you know, sponsors and the corporate support that she had, from other athletes stepping out. I really kind of contrast that with, I think it was almost 10 years ago that we were talking about Royce White in the NBA, who, you know, was a first round draft pick who was talking about his experience with anxiety disorder and really felt like he wasn't supported. A lot of the things that he was asking for are still in need, but the response to the support for her has really been just a positive thing that I'm seeing.
I saw a longtime sports writer, local sports columnist, and author Scott Pitoniak wrote a piece essentially, first of all, saying that he said, like, look, I'm one of the guys that a lot of people are talking about. These press conferences, which are mostly older white men asking younger athletes, increasingly younger people of color, women of color, about experiences. And Scott was pretty critical of the media. He was critical of some of his colleagues who were critical of Osaka for her decision. And I wanted to talk briefly to him about how he sees it from the lens of someone who has been in these news conferences for decades now, whether it's with the Buffalo Bills, athletes on regional levels, other international stars. I mean, he's sort of done it all. And I thought his perspective would be interesting here. I want to listen to some of what Scott had to tell us.
Hey, thanks for having me, Ed.
Why don't you start with some general thoughts about your reaction to Naomi Osaka's decision to pull out of the tournament and her reasoning behind it?
Well, you know, I think, to be honest with you, at first, you know, as somebody who's been in the sports journalism business for almost half a century now, you know, I've dealt with a lot of athletes who really didn't want to fulfill their obligations, who couldn't, as I put it, couldn't be bothered. And so, you know, initially I was wondering, you know, is this that case again of someone who just doesn't want to be bothered with media obligations, doesn't feel that, you know, she has to waste her time, you know, dealing with reporters and promoting her sport and so forth. And, you know, and I think that, you know, she, I think clarity came when she made the announcement that she was dropping out. I think there were some fuzzy areas initially. And when she dropped out, it was really kind of the first time that she went public with the fact that she's dealing with depression and anxiety, you know, dating back to when she defeated, you know, Serena Williams at the U.S. Open, you know, several years earlier and stuff. And I think that you know, that brought some clarity and some sensitivity, you know, to the issue. You know, I could feel for her. That, you know, she was dealing with something extremely serious here, that this wasn't just a case I'm going to blow the media off or whatever, I can't be bothered type thing, that she's dealing with a serious issue here. And I think an issue that too often gets overlooked, is stigmatized really in our society and in sports in particular, Evan, because, you know, sports is all about, we're taught from an early, early age, it's about gutting it out, you know, soldiering on, playing hurt, playing through injury. And, you know, we don't often treat mental illness the same way that we would if she was dealing with a knee injury. You know, she's coming back from a, you know, a terrible knee injury or something. We would probably be more forgiving, you know. And I think this can be a great opportunity in terms of us, again, looking at the true seriousness of mental illness, and that, yes, even big, strong, fast, agile athletes, you know, can be dealing with these things as well.
How would you feel if she came out and said, look, you know, after further evaluation of what I think will be beneficial to my mental health going forward, I'm just not going to speak to reporters anymore. I've got different platforms that I can use to communicate with fans, and I will do that. I love the fans. I love the game. But to protect myself, I'm not going to do any media with journalists, with reporters, with news conferences, et cetera. How would you feel about that as sort of a permanent condition of her coming back to the sport?
Well, I wouldn't like it, you know, because, again, I think this is a very nuanced issue here, and it's something I'm coming at it from two different angles, from the sensitivity of the issue of mental health, but also from a journalistic approach, too. And I do think that, you know, I do think that athletes do have, and teams have, an obligation to answer questions from the media. Now, again, some people will disagree, just as people in government and business, whatever, would argue against it. But I would hope that that's not the, you know, I hope that's not the answer. You know, I certainly hope that people will be compassionate toward her, to be understanding as she's, you know, coming back from this. But I think she has a great platform here, too, if she is able to get healthy. And that's the most important thing. That's obviously far more important than, you know, press conferences, you know, whatever, is that she needs to regain her mental health. But I would struggle with that because as a journalist, I think that, you know, I think you need to answer questions and you can't just, you know, this is part of life, you know, and you have to deal with failures in your life and learn how to deal with them. And that's, you know, that's part, I think, you know, you're all set to reap the benefits that you get from playing a sport, but, you know, you've got to deal with some of the difficult things too, I think. So I would, as a journalist, I would have an issue with that. And I hope it doesn't come to that. I really don't. By the same token, I understand, you know, these, I don't like press conferences or news conferences from a personal standpoint. I'm always looking for a different angle, a different story, often off the beaten path. And I do a better job, I feel, as a journalist doing one-on-one interviews. But it's impractical, right, that, you know, Naomi is going to sit down and do 700 interviews. That would be even more taxing, right, than a, you know, a press conference where you're going to try to get this out of the way and however many minutes they allot, you know, for her particular session and stuff. So I hope that, you know, I hope it doesn't come to that, really. I hope that there's an understanding, yeah, you're going to be asked questions that might be difficult for you to deal with, such as, you know, in the case of the French Open, a lack of success on clay courts, you know, never advancing beyond, what, the third round. Those aren't easy questions to answer, and it's not fun. I get that. But I do think it's part of, you know, it's part of, you know, what you're required to do in order to promote your sport.
So last question then for you. Let's see if how much common ground you and I have on this one. So my feeling is that everything is different now because of all of these media platforms. Athletes talk to mm-hmm. their fans. They post their own videos. They're all over all of the social channels. Some have their own media companies. They do the little mini documentaries. And when they do that, they are at least engaging and communicating in ways they could not back when you and I were first cutting our own teeth, both wanting to be the next greatest sports writers. Only you became that. I didn't. I ended up on radio. So, and so because they can do that, they can sort of get away with not doing news conferences because they can say, well, we're still talking to the people. My view on this is I don't prefer that, but it's just sports and I can live with that. I don't like it. I don't want most to do it, but I can get how they're still going to communicate, and especially if someone does have a mental health reason for doing it, I want to respect that. Where I would draw the line is politics. Elected leaders need to answer questions from journalists because if you are just putting out your own content, it's PR. It's propaganda. It is different than answering questions from journalists. Now, we can debate whether journalists need to, you know, improve their game, ask better questions, if we need to diversify the ranks of journalists. All of those things are fair, but I don't just mm-hmm. want political leaders putting out their own content, their own videos, et cetera, saying, well, I don't need journalists anymore, because we've seen that on the local level. We've seen that in the national level. And to me, then, what you're saying is I don't want to be questioned. I want to control the message, and that's PR. That's propaganda. It's similar in sports if they want to do it that way. It's, to me, it's just less of an impact on the world, so I can sort of live with it to some extent. I got to draw the line in politics. Where are you on that?
Yeah, certainly in the political arena, that's much more important. I mean, it has more direct impact on your life and on my life, you know, whether or not, you know, we're going to repair that bridge that's falling down around the corner from me or not. You know, yeah, that's a bigger thing than whether or not LeBron James is going to answer my question. I get all that. But I still feel, you know, I don't like the direction. I'm, you know, we've obviously seen that, you know, going in that direction with politics. People want to control the message and so forth. But I don't like it in sports either, because I still think the fan, the consumer, if you will, has a right to know the truth. And, you know, they're, you know, you're okay with them buying your product and whatever that will put money in their pocket and stuff. But there's tough things to answer. You don't want to have to deal with that. And I'm seeing this more and more with teams becoming more and more controlling. And it's interesting that, you know, this is a topic, a totally different topic, but the, you know, how the pandemic has kind of, you know, eased the way for professional sports teams now not to provide as much access as they once did. But I still think, you know, I still think you have an obligation, and you can control your message, you know, also in a press conference. I mean, Bill Belichick does it, you know, he's taken it to an art form, right, in terms of not answering questions or whatever. I mean, you can, I guess you can learn to do that. I don't particularly care for it because I just think you're being, you know, dishonest many times and stuff. But I don't know. I still, and maybe it's just the old-fashioned journalist in me that still believes that, you know, you have an obligation, whatever your profession is. And, yeah, you know, playing basketball or tennis or baseball or whatever is not as earth-shattering as, you know, as what the government is doing. I freely admit that. But it still has an impact, you know. So I would prefer. But I clearly see, yeah, that it is trending more and more. Everything is towards, I'm going to control the message. But you can only control it to a certain point.
That's Scott Pitoniak, longtime author and sports journalist. And let me turn back to our panel now. So Alexa Ross, you know, Scott admits he's one of those older white guys who's been in those news conferences a lot of people are talking about. He still sees the value of them despite the changing media landscape. Do you, Alexa?
You know, part of me does and part of me doesn't. And I wish Scott were on here live because there are a couple things that he said that I would like to challenge. And I think one of those is that when you're getting asked questions about your failure on clay court, those are not the things that are making her anxious. The ability to be around people is what's making her anxious. It's social anxiety. It doesn't matter what these people are asking her or if she's being praised or if there are people who are around her trying to get autographs. It doesn't matter. It's the idea and the messaging around people. And I think that that's something that a lot of people, especially these older white men who work in sports, don't understand, is that these kinds of things are not necessarily because of criticism. They're coming from a much deeper place. It's a cellular, molecular thing. As somebody who deals with anxiety and depression, it doesn't matter if I'm covering a Bills game or three high school sports games. If I'm having a bad mental health day and I can't get out of bed, I'm having a bad mental health day and I can't get out of bed. Sometimes I call out and sometimes I don't. And I think we need to look at how we view younger women of color. And I think that this comes as we look at people like Kevin Love and Brandon Brooks, who have been open about their battles with anxiety and how they've been so well received. And it's great that they've been well received. Do not get me wrong. I want everyone to be well received as they open up about their own struggles. I think that that's where the end of the stigma comes. However, I think that she needs to be given the same grace that these men have been given about their own mental health concerns. And I think that a lot of things that people forget, I as a white woman can't speak to this from experience, but talking to my friends who are people of color from Asian communities, as well as from Black communities, mental health isn't something that they talk about anyway. It's something that's internalized. It's something that you hear Black athletes talk about a lot, how they never felt they needed to get help because it was something that had always been looked down upon. And I think that that, compounded with her age, being 18 years old, being compounded with being a woman, she's going to face more scrutiny. And I think that it's unfair. And I think that if she were to say, you know what, I'll do press once a year before the major tournaments, I'd be okay with that. I think that the dedication to doing things, she has enough money, she has the platform, she's not going out of her way to say, I never want to talk to anyone ever again and I'm going to be a shut-in, but she needs to do what's best for her health. And I think that there's a lot that needs to be looked at, and I think that there's something that a lot of those older white men, especially guys like Scott, need to take a look at themselves and understand the, you know, where these perceptions of a young woman trying to better herself come from.
Yeah, I hear that. I think one of the first needs that is slowly being addressed is more women in sports reporting and more people of color in sports reporting. I think that's happening slowly, and I think that will help. I am also just curious, Alexa, if you also draw the distinction I do, saying if that's how Naomi Osaka wants to do it, I respect that and I want to honor that. If that started to sort of seep into other professions that are public figures, especially politics, I would not be okay with it. How do you feel about that?
I feel the same way that you do. I think that it's one thing for a politician who clearly has an agenda and some way that they want to be seen, do their own speaking and not be challenged on it, than have a young woman who could be one of the best tennis players in the world just talk about her own game. You know, I don't think that that's the same thing. She can talk about her training on her own. She can talk about her ability to tackle a clay court or not. I think that that's not the same as a politician only going off of their own talking points. That's where things start to get dangerous.
Mm-hmm. Dr. Seifer, can you add to some of what Alexa is saying? I mean, some of Alexa's, I think, sharp analysis of why Naomi Osaka, it's not that she doesn't want to talk about how she plays on clay versus how she plays on hard court or grass or anything else. It's something very different, and that's important for us to understand. What do you think, Dr. Seifer?
I think that's, you know, a really great point that, you know, anxiety, I often say, doesn't make sense. So some people could say, well, she can play in front of 10,000 people at center court, but she can't, you know, face 22, you know, people in a room. And that's a false equivalency. You know, it's not the same thing. Certain aspects, whether that's the social anxiety piece that can rev up an athlete in those situations. And for many athletes, you know, in between the lines, when they step on the court, when they step on the field, that's their base. That's their home. That's where they feel, you know, most confident, most ready. And it's not the same, you know, in terms of those abilities to manage stress and pressure within a sporting context versus these other contexts they may face outside of it.
Every person is different, and every person has, you know, sort of different ways of working through mental health challenges. What comes to mind for you that you know, are hoping for Naomi Osaka?
I think it really brings up this issue of accommodation, right? I think we're kind of getting stuck in this black and white on or off of like yes press conferences or no press conferences. And you just wonder, like, we almost need somebody from a psychological point of view, like at that organizational level, for these larger organizations to be able to say, how do we work with marketing and PR and work with that athlete in a way that accommodates them? You know, is it, if it's the, you know, number of people in a room for an athlete, do we find other ways to get the questions through a single source, and they can be sitting, they can be more calm. We can kind of, the members of the press can get their same questions answered. Are there things we can do through social media in a way that still presents the sport really positively, but can accommodate the needs of athletes from a mental health point of view?
Do you, by the way, Dr. Seifer, agree with Alexa that if Naomi Osaka said, I'm going to do one presser before the majors, and that's it for the year, would you be okay with that?
I'm okay with that.
Yeah.
I think that's absolutely fine. I think it also kind of just shows kind of just a lack of willingness to be flexible here to meet her needs. And I don't even think she's saying that I'm just going to
do one
and done, you know, that it's just like at this time, I'm not in a place where I'm ready for this.
Right.
is basically the message that she sent. And it's not a not for everything. It's a not right now and a need to take care of myself right now thing. And I think there could have been wonderful ways, you know, if you have somebody, you know, on, you know, whether it's on her team, you know, or whether it's, you know, probably more importantly at the organizational level for tennis, to be able to say, hey, let's find a way to be accommodating for these athletes.
Dr. Maloney, can you add to some of this conversation as we talk about distinguishing between athletes who are, you know, maybe not interested in talking about the sort of the granular level of their work, where they perform well, where they don't, what their track record is, versus athletes who, like Osaka, who are saying, this is not that. This is something very different. And for tournaments and for organizations to be able to recognize the difference.
Yeah, I think it's, you know, it's a little maybe a sign of the times and how we as a society and as individuals communicate. It's, you know, the last 10, 15 years has seen a tremendous change in how we interact with each other. Our kids interact with their peers in a very different way than we did growing up. And I think there needs to be some thought around how that's evolved and then its impact on mental health. You know, interesting that we're not talking about Roger Federer basically coming out of the tournament because he wanted to save his knee. Like, you know, why is it different? So I think that the whole mental health component has been stigmatized for so long. It is very, very real and has been real forever. Craig and I share many patients, young athletes who, you know, are fighting through different types of mental health, anxiety, performance anxiety, you know, injuries, and the impact that has on their development. And I think it's fantastic that it's finally being acknowledged and that we're finally giving it its due. You know, one of the stories that came out around this was that 35% of elite athletes identified as having some mental health condition that's impacted their life and their performance. I mean, this is a very real problem. If we were having 35% of athletes tear their ACLs, we would be all over this. So it's finally time that we're really giving it the attention it deserves.
Let me go ahead and read two very, very different emails that probably represent some of the split in people around the world to Naomi Osaka, and also to Kevin Love. I mean, I think Alex is making an important point here. There probably is a difference in the way athletes are received on these subjects based on gender. But I, you know, as a longtime Clevelander and Cavaliers fan, and someone who appreciates Kevin Love because we won a title in 2016, you know, I saw some backlash, and he was public about it too. And there's always going to be some backlash. The question is, like, where do the scales tip? And I think Dr. Maloney is pointing out something important here, that at the very least, this is not how it was 10 years ago, especially 20, 30, 50 years ago. The conversation is different. The expectations are different. And I think that's healthy. But here's two very different emails. Roger writes and says, Evan, I understand where this athlete is coming from completely. I have anxiety and I take medication for it. My medication makes it possible for me to email your show, but never call in and certainly never be a guest. My anxiety would be off the charts if I were to attempt to call your show. The very thought of speaking on the air would be overwhelming to me. It's the nature of the beast. Aside from that, does the ADA have a role here? Are they obligated to make reasonable accommodations for her? Have a great day and thank you. That's from Roger. There's Roger saying, hey, the ADA, can we make reasonable accommodations for athletes here? He is empathizing. He understands exactly what's happening here. Here's Charles who says, Evan, it is part of an athlete's job to talk to the media, even if all you say is, I'm just here so I don't get fined. It's not that there is a stigma associated with mental health. Everyone knows that it exists, and we should be cognizant of it. What we're seeing now is people using mental health as an excuse to always get their way or to ensure that they never have to be uncomfortable. Hardship is a part of life, and sometimes you won't get your way. Claiming mental health to remedy that wrong, and frankly, is wrong, and frankly offensive to people who actually are struggling with such issues. We should be preparing children for the road. We should not be preparing the road for children. That's from Charles. Two very different emails, Dr. Maloney. What do you make of those?
Yeah, I have to say, I think the second one fails to acknowledge that this is a real condition. And he says it at the end of his correspondence, but I don't agree. I mean, I don't know where it's written in someone's contract, and maybe it is, that if you're going to compete in the French Open, you have to do a certain amount of pressers. I mean, if mental health isn't given the proper due that every other type of injury that athletes sustain, we're doing them a disservice. And I you know, commend again the courage that she had to stand up and the other athletes to kind of bring light to this. I hope it's the turning point.
Dr. Seifer, what do you make of those two emails?
I think, you know, there is a point to, I think I always emphasize all the time that, like, you know, our mental health isn't necessarily an on-off switch, that there is hope in the fact that we can build these skills in terms of resilience, that we can help people through it. But we need to be human through that. We need to understand that it's difficult, and it may not be it may be a right now thing where people aren't prepared to do certain things, and not necessarily a forever and avoidance thing. And I think we need to kind of have that sense of empathy that people are struggling, that there are help and there are supports out there for people. But we need to kind of have that sense of empathy that people are going through some difficult things that we may not be able to fully understand, but that we can listen and that we can get them connected to the right supports.
Mm-hmm. Alexa, what do you make of the two emails?
It breaks my heart when people, you know, make comments that are saying, oh, well, this is an athlete's obligation. This takes away from people who are actually suffering. She is someone who's actually suffering, you know? And I think that just because somebody has a platform or somebody has made incredible strides in their career, whether it's the athletic or artistic or whatever it might be, that doesn't discount their suffering. Money doesn't change how you suffer. Mental health doesn't discriminate. It happens to me. It happens to her. It happens to men much older than me. It happens to a lot of people. And I think that what she's doing, and I like the first email stating, you know, this is how we end the stigma. They're right. That person is correct. And as somebody like that first person who has lived with this for much of my life, well before Naomi was playing tennis, it's nice to see. And I hope that more people start to understand. And by the next time somebody comes out and makes this kind of statement, they're a little more empathetic. And I hope that people, they just start to learn.
Three-time WNBA MVP Lisa Leslie wrote on Twitter, "It's so sad that we are in a time when a young person tells you they need help or a break, and people respond with anger or a lack of support. I stand with you, Naomi Osaka. Your mental health is just as important as your physical health." Steph Curry from the Golden State Warriors wrote, "You shouldn't ever have to make a decision like this, but damn, so impressive taking the high road when the powers that be don't protect their own. Major respect for Naomi Osaka." And we're seeing a lot of that. We're seeing a lot of conversations about what it means to be, quote, tough, and what it means to be strong. There are some maybe some nuance here from people like Rafael Nadal, who told the Washington Post, quote, "As sports people, we need to be ready to accept the questions and try to produce an answer. I understand Naomi Osaka, but on the other hand, for me, without the press, without the people who normally are traveling, covering us, who are writing the news and achievements that we are having around the world, probably we will not be the athletes that we are today. We aren't going to have the recognition we have around the world, and we would not be that popular, right? I understand her. On the other hand, I have my point of view that the media is very important as a part of our sport." So that's just sort of a sampling of some of the kinds of reactions. But I will also agree with Alexa Ross, a salute to a lot of the support that there is for Naomi Osaka, too. And I'll get some more of your feedback on the other side of this break. Let's take our only break of the hour. And if you're on the phones, we'll take some phone calls. We have Dr. Mike Maloney, chief of the Sports Medicine Division in the Department of Orthopedics at the University of Rochester Medical Center, and founder of Fitness Science and CHAMP, two programs for athletes of all ages that integrate mindset training with physical conditioning. Dr. Craig Seifer, a sports psychologist for the Fitness Science Program. Alexa Ross, a sports anchor and reporter at WROC-TV. We'll take those calls on the other side of this, our only break. Coming up in our second hour, we're joined by Suzanne Simard, the author of the new book, Finding the Mother Tree, Discovering the Wisdom of the Forest. She has become an influential person, not just for her science, but for her advocacy for us to see the world differently. Her science has demonstrated connections between trees that we never knew existed. We're going to talk about what it means for all of us next hour with Suzanne Simard. This is Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. John from Rochester first on the phone. Go ahead, John.
Hello. Am I on?
Yes, you are, sir.
I would distinguish between those situations where there's mental health issues, and of course they ought to be able to protect themselves, and politicians, of course, they need to answer questions as public servants. But athletes otherwise, I mean, they're entertainers. And it's a question to me of contract. Do their employers say they need to or not? Would we want to have a requirement, a moral obligation, it seemed like Scott was saying, to that singers must speak to the press or authors or absent a contract? It's up to whether or not it promotes their activity or not, isn't it?
Yeah, I think to a degree, I think that's probably right. I think there is a difference. Yeah, I think there is. I mean, you could argue certainly that especially highly paid athletes and the top athletes in the world are powerful people with powerful platforms, and a lot of them have taken more political and social stances. So some of their work actually goes beyond their courts, and I find that interesting.
So are rich people. Do they have to speak to the press? Does Elon Musk, does he have some kind of moral obligation to answer questions? I have trouble imposing this on someone absent a contract to do so.
Okay, yeah, sure. I hear that. And you're right, rich people are powerful people. And no, I don't think there's moral obligations. I don't think as a journalist I'm entitled to anything. And I don't like the disposition that journalists sometimes take, and I'm sure I've taken it before, where we sort of feel entitled to someone's time or an interview or a news conference. But I do think the public eventually will make their own judgments if the only content they're getting from people is packaged by the people and their handlers. Because that's,
sure.
Yeah, because that is just PR. At the same time, if someone says, look, for a mental health reason, I can't do this today, absolutely, I'm going to respect that. Absolutely, I want. Yeah, right. So I think we're pretty much on the same page, John. And I think that's, so those are important points, and I appreciate that. And I'll just kick it to our guests if they want to add more there. Alexa, what do you think?
Hi, thanks for your call. I think that, like you said, entertainers. That doesn't mean these entertainers don't struggle, and I don't think rich people obligated to speak to the press. I think that when you go into contracts and you look into contracts, agents can make those kind of specifications. I assume that Naomi's agent has already started to talk to different press organizations and things like that about what can be done. Obviously, we don't know how this is going to go into the future, but I think this is going to be we'll just have to wait and see. And I think that we're all in a situation where we just hope that she gets better, or she starts to feel more comfortable doing her job and doing it in a way that other people can be accessible. It can be accessible to other people.
Mm-hmm. Dr. Seifer.
I think, I would add that from everything I've, read about with Naomi Osaka, she was more than content with managing the fines that she would get for, contractually for not showing up to the press conferences. It was when it got progressively more punitive, in terms of endangering other opportunities for other Grand Slams or those kind of things, is when she needed to withdraw from the French Open. So it's kind of shows that she was very much prepared to kind of deal with the contractual aspects of it. But I think when it kind of impacted her future, that's when she felt like she needed to make this decision. And it just kind of shows a lack of involvement in awareness and knowledge about mental health, at those upper levels organizationally.
Dr. Mike Maloney, what do you think?
Yeah, I think all these athletes, whoever they are, they didn't set out to be entertainers. They didn't set out to be spokespeople. They set out to be the best tennis player she could possibly be, or the best basketball player they could be. We as a society have made them entertainers, and it doesn't mean that they have to be obligated to answer all of our questions or participate if that's creating, these mental health concerns. So I think, yes, they have a platform. They can utilize that, and some can benefit from them, but some may choose it's not the path that they want to go. She just wants to be a tennis player and to compete. And I understand the comments around, having an obligation to answer questions. But again, I'd go back to the fact that we've changed how we communicate. Social media has changed how we all communicate with one another. And so I think we have to adapt to that. And if she's more comfortable with that, then we have to figure a way to accommodate.
All right, let me get back to your phone calls. This is Peter. Go ahead, Peter.
Yeah, thank you, and hi. So if the Grateful Dead put on a show and it's lackluster, they still get paid. If Miss Misaka, if she goes out there and loses, she stops getting paid. So she's a competitor, not an entertainer. And it's ironic because to get to that level of doing that in specifically her sport, she has to be very comfortable being uncomfortable. She has to be very uncomfortable being comfortable. What I'm saying?
Yep.
So to have this situation, she has a serious malady. There's no doubt about it. And, it'll be, I hope that she can go the next step and be get through this because she'll inspire so many people. It's a situation that I don't agree with, like we have to adapt and dumb down to the technology and communicating. People still need to look people in the eye and go, this is what I stand for. That's being a human being. But she can look up Bill Belichick and go, oh, how do you handle the press? Or say, I'm only doing two questions, so let's get to it, whatever. You know, after you play your game, it's tradition. And, you know, if she's having a really bad day, you want to opt out, great. But this is an opportunity, and, you know, that's why we're talking about it.
Thank you, Peter. You know, and Peter's comment about how she ought to deal with this seems to dovetail with something Rich and Fairport emailed about. So let me read this email, and then I'll kick it to our guests there. Because Peter's saying, hey, look at Bill Belichick. He does it a certain way. Naomi Osaka can look at other athletes. She could limit the number of questions. She could figure out a different way. Rich and Fairport says, the focus seems to be on athletes and celebrity. In reality, most people in school and in their careers are called upon to speak in public. A fear of public speaking is one of the most common phobias. For those who experience anxiety, phobias, and mental health issues, it is difficult, but it is still a reasonable request for teachers and employers to expect a person to participate and speak in public. A person with these issues needs help to address the problems rather than to avoid the problems. Mental health and organizations such as Toastmasters can be a positive first step. So that's Rich and Fairport. You heard Peter. Dr. Cipher, what do you think about this idea that, hey, there's lots of things in life that are going to require public speaking, and if you have anxiety, if you've got mental health challenges that might prevent you, it's important that you find strategies to work on that.
I think it's a good point. I think it's also, if we bring up Bill Belichick, like he famously was known for not handling the press or reporters well in his first position with your beloved Cleveland Brown, right?
Belichick reference anyway, because he's just a jerk when he's doing it. This is not a guy who's like cleverly dealing with a mental health issue. He's just not, you know, a good role model.
Right.
Anyway.
Yeah. But I think there is a great point that in the midst of this, that there are skills that we can do to kind of help people through anxiety, that we can help them. But the key here is that we can have a balance. It's not an either or. We can have both accommodation and skill building in a way that helps people continue to learn and grow and develop. And especially with young athletes, they're just thrust into this, right? She has, for Naomi Osaka, she likely has, you know, maybe 16 or 15 years of experience on courts. You know, she's really just starting to kind of get this experience in terms of having to deal with press and be suddenly in the spotlight because of her abilities. And so that's going to take time for her to be able to build those skills, and those resources are out there, but it doesn't have to be an either or proposition. Either we give accommodations or we build skills. We can do both, and I think that's the human part of this that we need to keep in mind.
Dr. Maloney?
Yeah, I agree with Craig, I'm not thinking we have to dumb down how we communicate. I think we need to acknowledge that human communication has evolved in the last 10, 15 years. It's just very different. So I think Craig said it perfectly. You know, you can work on both sides of it, and it's just a continuing evolution. But I think the most important thing is acknowledging that mental health is real. This is, you know, this is something that people deal with all the time, inside and outside of athletics, and giving it a platform that's appropriate and getting people the help that they need like we would for any other condition.
Alexa Ross, what do you think?
I just want to piggyback off of that. I think that the biggest takeaway for this is we allow athletes to get help for their physical health. Why can't they get it for their mental health? They receive accommodations, they receive trainings, they receive medication. I think that we need to just start looking at mental health the same way we look at physical health, and a lot of these conversations we might not have to have anymore.
Steph writes to say, Evan, I played men's soccer at Geneseo for a few years, and I suffered from a friend's suicide and a friend's parents' death within 6 months of each other. I went straight to the coaching staff and explained I needed some time away from the team. I was surprised but relieved that the coach permitted me all the time for the resources that I sought. I cannot thank Coach Oliveri enough for this, and that it is the kind of coach's compassion that allows athletes to begin the recovery process. Thank you. That's from Stefan. I'm glad to hear that, Steph. Thank you. Caitlin writes to say, for athletes with social anxiety to be accommodated to meet their press obligations, do they need to have a diagnosis by a medical professional? Where is the level of severity to get out of a press obligation? Can any tennis player now say they have social anxiety that prevents them from doing press conferences? That is from Caitlin. Dr. Seifer, on the medical side of that, what would you say to Caitlin?
I think, you know, we, like, also with this, like, what's the big worry if we have 30% fewer athletes at press conferences and 30% are instead, we're doing something more creatively with Facebook Live or Instagram in a way that accommodates them, that still promotes their sport. I just don't see that there's some big worry or collapse in the great, you know, media industrial complex if we accommodate, you know, what people need.
And it sounds to me, and tell me if I'm hearing you correctly, that what you're saying is, sure, there will always be medical diagnosis, et cetera, but there's nothing wrong with believing someone when they say, I'm hurting, I'm struggling, I need this, this is what I need, and I've got to take it.
Absolutely. Let's you know, give the benefit of the doubt in terms of what people need. And I don't understand this need that sometimes we have to jump out to, they're just trying to get out of this, you know, and I don't see that. I don't see that in the athletes that I work with. And I see people every day who are genuinely hurting through the mental health piece. And I think it adds to that invisibility of it. You know, if somebody tears their ACL and they get it repaired with Dr. Maloney, we're going to see them on crutches. We're going to see them with a brace. We're going to see the scars, but we can't see this mental health piece. And I think being open to hearing about that and being able to respect that is a really huge piece for the shift we're making, I believe, and we need to continue to make.
Alexa, what would you say to Caitlin, who's wondering, does this open the door for anybody to just claim anxiety and get out of obligations?
I think just like what was just said, we need to believe people. I think that, you know, it's a very big thing to admit that you're struggling. And because of such a stigma, people aren't just coming out and saying, oh, well, I'm struggling, if they're not. You know what I mean? So many people who are struggling are unable to admit that they need help or are unable to share their own struggle. And I think that her being able to admit it speaks volumes to what she's going through. And I think that, you know, if you're going to speak up, you're not really doing it from a place of being fake about it. I think that, you know, if you're speaking up about a struggle, it's something that's really happening.
Dr. Maloney, what do you think?
Yeah, I would liken it to, you know, if someone comes to see me for an injury or some condition and I identify that their muscles are out of balance, I send them to physical therapy. If someone comes in and they've got, you know, a mental health concern, they should be able to get the same type of therapy for that. It's all these things are on a spectrum, and there'd be different levels. And to say you need to have a, you know, a formal diagnosis, I think is probably oversimplifying what mental health means and what conditions in general mean. So I think, yeah, you have to believe people. You have to be able to provide them the resources to get the care that they need, and how we define it really shouldn't really matter.
I want to give you all 30 seconds apiece as we close the show with some final thoughts you want to leave with listeners. Alexa Ross, sports anchor and reporter from WROC. First up, go ahead, Alexa.
I just wanted to thank you so much for having me on for this conversation. I think that when we talk about mental health, remember that athletes are people too, that entertainers are people too, artists are people too, that so many people you know might be struggling. To be kind and to give people grace when they do open up to you, because they really just want to be heard and they want to be accepted for whatever is going on with them.
Dr. Craig Seifer.
I think one thing I would say that I'm feeling hopeful about, that I'm excited about, is that in the same way that we can do things through strength and conditioning to kind of build and prevent, you know, difficulties and injuries, we can do the same in terms of mindset and mental health. And I think I'm really excited about the ability that we can help as a preventive measure, that as a resilience building measure, and not just be reactive with this. And I think that's what I'm hopeful about in terms of some of the discussion that's coming out going forward.
And Dr. Mike Maloney.
Thank you also for letting me be part of the conversation. I think for me, the important part of taking care of athletes is to they should have the confidence to be able to share that with us as their care providers and respect that and try to get them the help that they need. And just acknowledging that this is a very real phenomenon. This is not something new, and it's something that we have resources to help them with, and we're still learning about it. I think it's mental health is probably something that's, you know, we're going to know a lot more in the next 10, 15 years than we maybe knew the last 100 years as we understand the biology of the brain and the interaction between the brain and the body. And so I think just acknowledging that it exists and knowing that there are resources and it shouldn't be a stigma anymore.
Always appreciate the insight. Dr. Mike Maloney, thanks for making the time for the program once again. And I look forward to when we can see all of you soon. But thanks for being on with us, Mike.
Absolutely. Thank you.
Dr. Craig Cypher, thanks for being back with us. We'll see you soon.
Yes, it was my pleasure. Thank you.
And Alexa Ross, you can find her on WROC, a sports anchor and reporter. Wonderful insight. Thanks for being frank, blunt, and I think so insightful on this program. Thanks for being with us, Alexa.
Thank you so much for the opportunity.
More connections coming up in a moment.